What's up, friends? It's Haley, aka Bird.
And Randy.
And you're listening to the Give 'em the Bird podcast.
This podcast is all about challenging what it means to be healthy, fit, female, and everything in between.
It's about pushing back on societal expectations, dismantling the status quo, and celebrating life in the gray area.
And most importantly, it's about giving the bird to living life any way but your own way. Thanks for tuning in.
Now, let's give them the bird. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Give 'em the Bird podcast. You've got Haley and Randy here today, and this is the highly anticipated Ozempic episode, or semaglutide, or Wegovy, or you name it. And we're feeling good about it, yeah, Randy?
So good. I had to put on my pharmacist cap, my pharmacist white coat, if you will. It off, and I'm ready.
See, we just, that's why you, this is like continuing education for your pharmacy credentials, you know,
that's
your pharmacy
right.
License, like that you should be able to submit this. We are diving in. Yeah. We are diving into Ozempic, weight loss drugs, etc. Before we talk about it though, we want to make it, you know, really clear that talking about these medications and it's not to shame individuals who are making the choice to use them. That's not at all our tactic here at all. It's really more about informing people so that they can make an informed choice whether or not they want to use a weight loss drug like Wegovy, Ozempic, etc. And I also think, like, you know, we know that when we're talking about weight loss in general, like, we all have the autonomy to decide what we want to do with our body. And I think I can speak for us both in saying that, like, we don't shame anybody for wanting to lose weight because the system is just working the way that it's supposed to work. Like, mm-hmm. The $72 billion plus diet industry, like, oh, what do you know? All that money is working. It's like feeding this idea, this narrative that, like, we need to change our body sizes. So just want to put a big, you know, asterisk out there that if you are someone who is considering using this drug, is using it, has used it, we love you. We are not shaming you by any means. And I would be lying if I said that the idea of it isn't appealing even to me. Like, I know that that's come up in several podcasts, like the Victoria Brown's Real Pod, mm-hmm. this past couple weeks or something like that. We talked about it when you and I were out for appetizers the other night. And just this idea of, it's like, wow, this magic weight loss pill is, like, now available, that we have spent much mm-hmm. of our life just, like, wishing for this miracle drug. So again, not shaming you. We are right here with you. And I'm very excited for Randy to go off pharmacy-wise.
Yeah. And I would say too, like, I envision myself at some point, or us both, maybe feeling like we're getting a little bit, like, heated or, like, impassionate about not using Ozempic or weight loss drugs. But again, yes. It's not because there's any shame in using it. It's just because I think so many people use it without knowing, and this is not on them, but without being properly educated by the people that should be educating them about yes. how it actually works, what the effects are, what happens when you stop it. And then I do get really, like, heated about companies, you know, profiting off of people not having the right information. So if there's mm-hmm. any, like, feelings of hate towards Ozempic, it's those things about it, not, like, the yes. drug for people to use it. So just to be clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I echo that because there's no way that I'm not going to hive out a little bit. Like, even just, like, looking, Googling it makes me hive out a little bit. So, So Randy, I feel like a lot of people that listen to this podcast, when we say Wegovy or Ozempic, they're like, I get it. But tell us, for, like, if we have a new listener joining us, what is it? What is this? The big O. What the big O. Oh my God.
The big O. Oh dang.
Jesus. Take it away.
Take it away. Okay. So I'll start by saying that an asterisk on this. I've been out of practice as a pharmacist for a year and a half, two-ish years.
Oh my gosh.
No license, but just,
you but know. Compared to your, like, how many years of school in practice, what, like,
right, and I practiced for 12, I was in school for 6, so, but when I was working, the 10 of the 12 year, 11 of the 12 years that I was working, I was working directly with patients who had diabetes, and we often use medications like Ozempic for diabetes, so I was educating patients on these medications every week. Now, since I've left, the medication landscape has changed, and there are a lot of newer options available. And so I don't even know like what all of the brand and generic names are anymore. I used to be able to tell you, but so anyway, I do have some experience specifically with these medications, but I would say Ozempic, we'll just use that as a broad term for all of the medications in that same class. They are GLP-1 agonists or glucagon-like peptide agonists. So what they do is they attach to GLP receptors in the gut, and they essentially slow the emptying of the gut so that you end up feeling fuller faster. And we assume that that means fewer calories in, and that is what leads to the weight loss associated with the medications. However, there is some evidence that shows that like the slowing of the gut kind of dissipates over time. So how it continues to work for weight loss, I don't know that we're fully privy to that. But then in addition, when it's used for diabetes, it also helps with the release of insulin when there is glucose or sugar on board. So it helps people lower their blood sugar levels with a fairly low risk of causing low blood sugar, which is really good. It's a really good drug for diabetes. But yeah, overall, in the way that it works for weight loss is just slowing the movement of food through your stomach. So you kind of have more of a bulk in there. So you can't fit much more in. You feel fuller faster. You don't eat as much. So.
Okay. That makes sense. So I don't know why, but I'm imagining when people, take it, it's like a shot in their ass. Is that, but no. Then I've also seen on commercials, it's like in the, like in your tummy, like it, like how do you have, but it's an injectable, like again, for people who aren't familiar, it's like an injectable medication, right?
It is correct. There are several different medications in the same class. And all but one of them are an injectable form. Okay. Rybelsus, I believe, is the oral form, and I believe it is only marketed for diabetes at this time. So I don't think there's a weight loss approved option that's oral. Okay. But these injections, most of them are once a week. Some of them are more frequent, but they're given subcutaneously, which just means under the skin. So it's a teeny tiny little needle.
Is it like for diabetes, like that kind of needle? Yes. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Or like what's the, when you're having EpiPen?
EpiPen, I think that actually goes into the muscle. Oh, so that would be a longer needle. So like, yeah, right. Yeah. No, thank you. Like when you're getting like a flu shot or COVID vaccine or whatever, that's a long needle because it's going, it has to penetrate into the muscle. But these just have to go in. Are you going to stay with us, Haley?
Yeah, I'm just going to pass out for a second. Let me mute myself. No.
But these needles are super, super tiny because they just have to go under the skin. And generally people give them in the stomach because that's the easiest to do on yourself. You could give them like in the back of the arm, or maybe even like the tops of the thighs, but most people just do their stomach because they don't have to like undress and they can like see their stomach clearly. Okay. So
that makes sense. And so you said you take them like once a week, and is it the same for whether it's weight loss or like diabetes?
So that's where it's a little different in terms of the dosing. You still do give it weekly, but we'll take Ozempic, for example. So the drug name is semaglutide, and the brand name for the medication that is FDA approved for diabetes is Ozempic. At higher doses, it has been FDA approved for weight loss, and that is Wegovy. So it's just more medication is given for weight loss. And this is where we see like hangups with insurance coverage and the cost and everything. So there are no insurance plans that I'm aware of that cover any type of weight loss medication. They just don't cover them because research has shown that they do not work long term unless you take them forever. this is brand new information. So a way to kind of get around that is that prescribers will prescribe Ozempic, which is the one proven for diabetes, and just prescribe that for people because it does still cause weight loss, just probably not to the degree that the higher dose Wegovy would do. And some insurances will approve a medication like Ozempic without like documentation that this person, yes, they have diabetes. So that's how some people who don't have diabetes can get Ozempic prescribed by their physician. There are certain insurance plans like Medicaid, for example, that require documentation that the patient has diabetes in order to be prescribed Ozempic. Thing like it. So, and so I think that's why we see people kind of going off market to get Ozempic from the internet or somewhere where it's a little riskier and you might not be getting what you think you're getting.
I want to talk more about that, but I'm curious. So if someone is getting someone with, like government insurance is getting Ozempic for diabetes, does insurance cover, like, is that covered by the government insurance?
Generally, yes.
Okay.
Sometimes
okay,
they have to meet certain requirements of like, you know, their A1C or the marker of their level of control has to be a certain, you know, threshold or whatever. But yes, in most cases, if you can document that diabetes is present, then yes, it would be covered.
Okay. Can we talk about the black market off-label stuff? Because I was also really curious, and this might be different topic or different answer, or it might be the same. I'm seeing that our med spas starting to like offer Ozempic, and is it because they're run by like registered nurses, or that just seems so strange to me, but they're also the same places that are giving like doing like IV therapy as well, you know? So is that the compounded stuff, which I'm sure you're going to talk more about, or is that like legitimate Wegovy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, great question. I think it's probably a combination of all of the things. So my understanding of this whole scenario is that the only reason that these med spas, wellness spas, health spas, whatever they are able to offer semaglutide or Ozempic or Wegovy or whatever they're calling it is because the commercial product is on shortage right now. And it's on shortage because, I mean, for lots of reasons, but, you know, once it became known that it was causing this fairly significant weight loss, plus, you know, social media and celebrities starting to use it, like it just became very, very popular. And so there was a shortage, because of that. And then some manufacturers, you know, switched up how they were packaging it, and that caused some shortage issues. But anyway, people, pharmacies, med spas, whatever, can't just make any drug they want because they have a compounding facility available to them. Legally, you can only compound a medication if it's not commercially available or if it's on shortage.
And when you say compound, can you define that? Like, what does that mean? I feel dumb for asking that, but I'm going to ask it.
Yeah. So basically just like making the medication into its form to be delivered. So I truly don't know for a fact how like the base medication of semaglutide comes. Maybe it's a powder, maybe it's a liquid. But in order to be injected, it needs to be mixed with these other things before it can be given.
Okay. So kind of like when they make up like the amoxicillin, at the pharmacist. Okay, that makes
that's a very simple compound. And so yeah, when we get our medication, like if we got Ozempic from the pharmacy, we're getting the medication exactly the way it was delivered to the pharmacy from the supplier, from the manufacturer. Whereas if you're going to these med spas right now, what you're getting is a medication that was made in a compounding facility from a base medication mixed with some other things to make it into what you're getting. And that's legal when a medication is on shortage or it's not commercially available in the form that you need it. So, you know, for example, if you had a medication or you had a illness that could only be treated by a pill and you can't swallow pills or your child can't swallow pills, you can compound it into a liquid if it's not already available as a liquid.
Okay. So that makes sense. I'm following.
But what I found when I was kind of researching this a little bit was that some of these compounding places, pharmacies are more likely med spas, I think, is where they're seeing most of the issues. They found that they aren't using like the approved bulk product that's approved by the FDA. So when you can legally compound something, you also have to use like the approved bulk compound. And so they found that some of these compounders are not using the same like bulk substance that the drug manufacturer uses when it makes the medication. So what's happening is they're using a salt form. So, semaglutide itself is just semaglutide. It's a manufactured medication that's biosimilar, exactly the same as one of like the peptides and things that's already in our body, basically. But some of these compounders are using salt forms of semaglutide. So semaglutide sodium or semaglutide acetate. So basically it just means the chemical structure is slightly different. But the problem with that could be that it could result in the final product having a different strength or different concentration than the commercially available products. And neither of those salt forms has been studied like semaglutide has. So do we know if it's as effective? Do we know if it's as safe? It seems like a small change and it's probably the same, but it might not be. It might affect us differently. It might cause different side effects.
So that's why people are saying like when it's compounded in some of these places, like you don't even really know what you're getting. I mean, that might be like an extreme situation. Like it's, like you said, it's probably relatively close, if not the same, but you also may not know again, like the dosing, because it might be different based on who, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. And you know, whenever you're introducing more like human interaction with things like that, there's also a lot more room for error. So the Institute for Safe Medication Practices gathers like reports on all of these adverse effects or adverse events resulting from, you know, overdoses or compounded medications or any issue related to a medication. And there's been reports of patients receiving the wrong doses, you know, 10 times the dose, ending up in the emergency room with low blood sugar, just because, you know, the strength and the dosing, it's more complex when it's being compounded and it's being drawn up by somebody. Whereas when you receive the drug from the pharmacy, the commercial drug, it's very difficult to give the wrong dose because it's like this little device where you just turn the dial until it clicks and then you know you have the right dose. You really don't have to measure anything. But with these compounded medications, you have to, you know, mix things up, measure things out, and it's easier to get that wrong. And sometimes it's the patients having to do that. And if they're not used to measuring out medications for an injection, that can be difficult and easy to result in giving the wrong dose too. So
that's scary.
Yeah. There's just like
the thought of having to like mix my own medication that I'm going to like inject inside myself. Like, excuse me, like I don't even trust myself to not measure out my DayQuil. Like I can't, you know.
Or accidentally take NyQuil instead of DayQuil.
Oh God, sweet Jesus, hate that. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And that compounding was something that I was like, I don't really understand it, but now I do.
Well, and because of that, you know, I think this is a temporary thing. Like, I think these med spas that have been what I think is capitalizing on, you know, a trend and something that, you know, they're seeing kind of as a money grab is not going to last when manufacturing picks back up and it's no longer considered in shortage. So, but we'll see.
And we'll be happy for when that happens, I guess. Yeah. Like, because will med spas, will they be able to access like the actual thing then? You know what I'm saying?
You know,
maybe you don't, I don't know what the,
I don't know exactly. I'm not familiar with how all of that works on the back end. Yeah, that's a
good
question.
Which makes sense. You've only worked in an actual pharmacy. So, I mean, you
know. Yeah, and yeah, I mean, this is like the first medication that we've seen in a long time that like people have been like clamoring to get for weight loss. And so, yeah, I don't know exactly what the rules are in terms of distribution from manufacturers and things like that. But
so if someone is going to, I mean, we're going to talk about like side effects, long-term, all of that. But if somebody is like going to access these weight loss drugs, it sounds like our recommendation, I mean, is to not at all. But again, if you're going to, like, it's the best route is through a pharmacy, through your actual healthcare provider, rather than maybe a med spa because of this, the implications from like compounding that could be involved.
Correct. Yes. Okay. There's the implications of compounding, but then also with a med spa, you know, you're technically meeting with a health practitioner of some kind. You have to, because it has to be prescribed. I'm not saying anything about the capability of these providers that these med spas are using. However, they're more than likely not your everyday provider for all of your other care. So,
sure. Yeah. They don't have the whole history.
You don't have your whole history, and sure, you can get them your records and things, but there's something to be said for a healthcare provider that you have a relationship with. And I just think that makes a really big difference because they might just know things about you that aren't easily accessible in your record, or, you know, something that might easily be missed by a different provider, your provider knows about you. So I think having a holistic approach to your health is always a good idea in terms of, you know, having your provider, your one main provider involved and aware of all of your healthcare decisions so that you can kind of work together as a team and everybody's in the know rather than kind of picking and choosing from different providers to get what you want and nobody really being on the same page with what's happening.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's not, again, like you mentioned, it's not a matter of like education and knowledge or anything other than knowledge about your personal health history and having built a relationship with like a primary care provider and then just having all those details and just, I think, getting everything in one place, like a one-stop shop, if you will, you know, that makes it a lot easier. Okay. So we inject the medication. What happens? Like, I just, it's like, like what are the side effects? Go off.
So the medications are long acting. So that's why you only have to take them once a week because they last for like the full week. So because they're long lasting, it's also sometimes a little bit slower for the side effects to show up. So some, in some cases, people don't start feeling the side effects until 1 to 2 weeks in. But the typical experience is some upset stomach, some nausea, some vomiting, maybe some diarrhea, kind of all of the GI stomach things are on the table in terms of how people feel. And I've seen it kind of run the gamut when I was treating patients for diabetes with these medications. Sometimes people would say, I don't feel any differently at all. I feel totally fine. Some people would be like, I don't feel great, but, you know, it's tolerable. And when that's the case, generally, if they continue taking it for a couple more weeks, those subside. They get kind of used to that, or their body kind of acclimates. And then I've seen some people that are like, I am missing work because I can't stay out of the bathroom and this is miserable, and they stop taking the medication because of that. So there's just no way to know exactly how it'll affect you, but generally there's some level of discomfort for a couple of weeks, usually closer to the time that you're taking the injection. So the like first day or two after the injection. And when you do start taking it, you start with a lower dose and then you gradually increase it to kind of help prevent some of those side effects. But those are some of the main things. Some of the more rare side effects that we worry about would be, it's been linked to or associated with pancreatitis, so inflammation of the pancreas, which is generally a pretty serious condition requiring hospitalization. And so we try not to use it in people that have a history of that, but it can also, it has been linked to, you know, people experiencing that that don't have a history of it. Also like gallbladder complications, and there's been some reports of bowel obstruction also. And then I wasn't aware of this, but, apparently one of the medications, I can't remember which one, it's not Ozempic. It's a different one, but it has been associated with, increased thoughts of suicide.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I think in the UK, it now has labeling, about that. And I believe it has labeling in the US or that's coming. I'm not exactly sure on the details of that, but I wasn't aware of that before. Like I refreshed my memory on all these things for this episode.
So, also
one thing I learned recently too, is that one of the medications, tirzepatide, I think, has a warning label for the potential for oral contraceptives to be less effective when you take it.
Okay.
Because it does slow gastric emptying or slow the emptying of the contents of the stomach. And so you're not absorbing, or it's not getting absorbed fully. So it's not as effective. But they say to use a backup method just for the first 4 weeks when you take it or when you make an adjustment. But anyway, there's little things like that, that, there's just more to consider, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like, there's more to consider in terms of your health history, other medications you're taking, and things like that, you know, whenever you take a new medication, but these especially.
I'm curious, and maybe this is kind of off topic, but, like, the suicidal thoughts, is that related? Like, my first thought is because, like, serotonin is, like, produced in the gut. Like, is that the relationship there?
Maybe. I have
no idea. I mean,
I don't know that they know, you know, and all of these associations, even like the pancreatitis and things, like there's no direct, like, yes, this causes it. It's always just, you know, we've seen some reports of this in people taking this. We should watch it to see if, like, and then, you know, further down the road, we'll have more studies where they're actually, you know, looking at those as outcomes to see if there is a, a stronger relationship. But also, you know, I just wonder about the population it's being used in too. Are they more prone to suicidal ideation because they have shame about their body and, you know, things like that? That's always a possibility too.
Yeah. And I even think about, because it, again, it makes you feel, what did you say? Did you say fuller, longer, or
is fuller, that kind faster.
Of fuller, faster. So you like eat less food. And I also just think about, like, I mean, and again, this is, I am no doctor or medical provider, but I also just know, like, when we put ourselves in a self-imposed famine, like how that, you know, when we go on a diet, how that impacts like our psychological, emotional, mental well-being too. And so I wonder if, even if our, I don't know, like, I wonder if it's the same sort of mechanisms that like support that as well. And just, but I agree with you. Is it that we're using it in people who have a history of experiencing weight bias and weight discrimination? That's, I hadn't thought about that. That's a really good point. So we don't stay on it for forever, right? Like, when do, I like how I'm saying we as like, but we're, I'm not about to take this. I promise. It's just the way that I talk, but yeah, you don't stay on it for forever. So like, how how long do people stay on it for? What's the recommendation? Is there one? There's not, it looks like.
Great question. Great question. I mean, if you want to maintain the weight loss that you have experienced because of one of these medications, yes, you need to stay on it forever.
And that's just like these, like the diets that we talk about. Like if you want to maintain the weight loss that you experience as a result of keto, which is again, just restricting your calorie intake, essentially, like, you know, you have to stay on it for forever, unless there are other things that are also being changed. But again, still not very, it's not sustainable. Okay.
Right. Right. Mm. And same thing when it comes to its use in diabetes. If you want the effect of the lowering of the A1C or that marker of the level of diabetes control, you have to stay on it. When you stop, it generally goes back to where it was before. So, but yeah, it's just like any other diet, any other weight loss medication, it only works while you're using it. And so, yeah, that's the question. Like, what's happening? What are these people going to do? Take it forever?
Right.
I mean, I guess if you can afford it, sure, go for it. But we don't know what the long-term effects are and like long-term use yet. It's still a relatively new medication. I mean, in the spectrum of how long other medications have been around. Right. And, you know, I think I wouldn't hesitate to have my patients with diabetes use it for better A1C control. And it's actually moved up and is a first-line medication for people who have a history of cardiovascular disease or kidney disease, because it's shown to be helpful in reducing death and hospitalizations and things for people with those other disease states as well. But yeah, when it comes to weight loss, I guess the question always comes back to why? And is there a better way to achieve whatever it is you're trying to achieve?
You know? Yeah. It's like, do the pros outweigh the potential cons? Do the pros of like losing this weight relatively quickly outweigh the cons of potential cons of some of these like longer term or even shorter term side effects, and you know, the cons of how much it costs, the fact that like if you're going to stay on it long term, paying for it long term, and then the potential cons associated with what long term usage does when we don't really know yet. Someone had submitted a question about, like, what are kind of our thoughts, or like, what do we think about like Weight Watchers and like Noom and other companies embracing the use of, Ozempic. And honestly, I hadn't like totally looked into this yet. I had seen, like, I knew Oprah was being talked about and like Oprah's, you know, associated with Weight Watchers and everything, but Before we hopped on, I was reading like some of the interviews from, you know, people on the executive board of Weight Watchers and everything. And the whole, again, it kind of reminds me of what you mentioned of med spas kind of capitalizing on this like new trend as like a money grab. That's like what Weight Watchers is doing. And again, I didn't even look into Noom, but I'm sure it's the same thing. But yeah, Weight Watchers is now, they have like a new membership plan for members who can take, you know, GLP-1 prescriptions like Ozempic or Wegovy. And their whole thing is you just have to pay more money. So instead of paying like the $23 monthly membership, you have to pay an additional $99 monthly fee, excluding the price of the medication. So that's not even like paying for the medication itself. And I think that I listened to one interview from, I don't know, like the chief scientist or something like that. I'm not even kidding you. There's a tick crawling up my wall. Yeah. So there's no way I'm going to be able to edit that out, but I'm pretty sure that's what that is. Anywho, listen, ticks are just like part of the family because of our dogs. Right. Yeah. But anywho, this like the chief scientific, whatever, you know, I don't even know what his title was totally. He mentioned that like, well, the benefit with Weight Watchers is like, you're learning the keys to sustainable behavior change while you're also taking these medications. And if you just take these medications alone, you're not learning that. And I literally wanted to like shake him through my screen and just be like, what you're saying is exactly right, but Weight Watchers is wrong. Like, that's not sustainable behavior change. And I should say that I have worked with some people, and I know that there are people who it has been sustainable for them. And I don't want to like exclude their experience. But for the large majority of people, it's not these sustainable behavior changes that, like, again, and that's not even Ozempic included. That's just right. Weight Watchers on its own, you know?
Right. And I didn't know that Noom had kind of embraced it either. But what I think is super frustrating about Noom is that they are all about, like, their whole platform is like behavior changes to get where you want to be. Like, and so that now that they're promoting this medication, it just makes absolutely no sense to me. And it's just clearly for money.
And they talk about, like, the frustration with Noom too, is that, like, they are kind of like embrace, like, I'm pretty sure, and I don't know if still, but if you Google just intuitive eating, Noom is one of the first things that pops up, like, for a long time. I don't know if it still is, but it was. And they were co-opting intuitive eating and co-opting this, like, anti-diet. Again, just like the same way that Weight Watchers is utilizing Ozempic now, Noom and Noom is too. Well, they were also doing that with intuitive eating and with anti-diet culture. So
yeah, it's like they don't have a lane that they've chosen.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think one thing that I find interesting, and I could be wrong on my logic on some of this, but I think what's so intriguing to people about Ozempic, or why they think that it'll work for them, and that they'll be able to sustain weight loss long term, even if they stop the medication, is they think, okay, I'm going to use this to kind of kickstart things. And while I'm doing it, I'm going to use diet and exercise. And so then when I stop, I'll already have this healthy lifestyle implemented. And I agree that in theory is maybe, you know, it makes sense. However, what I feel likely happens, and they have no control over this, is especially if they do lose a fair amount of weight while taking Ozempic or a medication like it. And maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Haley, but when your body size decreases, sometimes your metabolism can slow a little bit as well, because you don't have as much, you don't need to burn as much energy because you have a smaller body size. So not only do you have a little bit slower metabolism, potentially, I mean, it also depends on your activity level, I suppose, and all these other things.
Yeah.
But pair that with then having this increase in appetite because you no longer have that, you know, feeling fuller faster. So even though you're trying to do all the right things, you can't really battle this, like, sudden biology. Increase in your appetite. Yeah, plus potentially lower metabolism. I feel like it's just a recipe for that weight to come back, despite you maybe having made.
That's like me. That's what me with drinking.
despite having made these behavioral changes. And so, and, you know, I'm sure there's some people that does work for, but I think there's also gonna be a lot of people that, you know, think that's, you know, they're going to be able to kind of overcome that, but it's just going to be too strong, like the biologic things happening that
can't. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think too about, I think we've probably referenced it before, and maybe I need to, like, include a link in the show notes if I remember to the study, because I know that intuitive eating, like, when you go through the certification process, like, it's a big study that they reference a lot, is like the Biggest Loser study. And this is like an extreme case, but with the Biggest Loser, if you're not familiar with the show, that was, it's an extreme weight loss show, and they are eating minimal amounts of calories, exercising an extreme, like, I'm talking, I don't even know, more than 5 hours a day, like 10 hours, like, insane. I mean, and the study followed, I want to say, again, I might butcher this because I don't have it in front of me, but I will try to link it in the show notes. The study followed them, I want to say, like, I don't know, for some reason, they followed, I think, like 18 people or something like that. All but one of those individuals, I want to say it was like four, maybe up to 9 years. Listen, I'm not good with numbers, but they followed them after the show, and all these people lost hundreds of pounds, which we can see with Ozempic too. Like, we can see that. Well, as they followed them over the years, it was a long-term study. They found that not only had they regained the weight and then some, So again, maybe they went from like 500 pounds down to 200 pounds. Well, they were all the way back up to 500 pounds, but their metabolism was still stunted. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things with yo-yo dieting and like the irony of it. And especially when it comes to drastic weight loss, like not even talking about the negative impacts that it has on our body, you know, physically, but physiologically, psychologically, all of that. The irony is that it leads to inability to lose weight over time. Like it's just, or like a stunted ability to. So I completely agree with you that it's not, while I can, you know, empathize with and totally understand this idea of like, I just want to lose the weight quickly, you know, which is, it's really common. Like I've experienced that myself too. Like, I'm just going to do this thing that, ooh, like maybe isn't the best idea, but you know what? It's only going to be a short-term fix. And by the time I lose that weight, I'm going to be able to have these routines and these habits in place. And it's going to be able to be sustainable for me. And unfortunately, yeah, I don't think that it is.
Yeah. It rarely mm-hmm. works that way. And I think, one aspect of this whole thing too, is that I think people who, and I hate using these terms because we know the BMI is just trash. But like who are mm-hmm. quote unquote overweight, obese based on their BMI, whatever. Mm-hmm. Those who have chosen not to use Ozempic feel like stuck almost, like envy towards people who are using it because they're losing weight, but like frustration because they want to do it the right way, quote unquote, mm-hmm. again, because nobody needs to lose weight. That's not the point of this conversation, but you know what I mean? I think they feel stuck being like, oh, I'm kind of jealous, but also like, I don't want to take the easy way out. And like, but these people getting all these compliments on their changing body and, you know, it's just hard. And you mentioned Victoria Brown's podcast earlier when we started talking and, what's the name of it? Real Pod? Is that the name?
I think, Real Pod.
I follow her on social media and love her, but I just have too many podcasts in my queue. I have never really listened to her podcast, but I did listen to her most recent episode. And we talked about this briefly when we went out, but, she talks about her struggles and how she's been struggling more recently. Mm-hmm. And she actually mentions Ozempic as a potential contributor to why she's been struggling more. Because, you know, it's just so, it's everywhere you look right now. Mm-hmm. And she said that, like Google searches for Ozempic and weight loss and things like that are up, and Google searches for like body positivity and things of that nature are down. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of a change in the culture, which has really affected her. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I found very interesting that she said is, you know, we have no problem expressing concern for people who are calorie restricting, starving themselves, basically. We have no problem, like, you know, saying like, you shouldn't be doing this, this is a bad thing, whatever. But when they're doing it with the assistance of a medication, we're like, yeah, let's do it. Give me that Ozempic. Let's basically starve myself and not, you know, eat enough calories because a medication is making me do it. You know, you can say that about other weight loss medications too, but I'd never really thought about it that way. It just, it's interesting.
I think it's like
different ways it affects people.
Yeah. And I think it kind of goes back to this idea of like when something is like medically supervised, like I, again, will work with students who are recommended to, you know, consume 1200 calorie diets, and I'm not a dietitian, so I can't do a whole lot about that. Though I do work with a great dietitian who is like anti-diet and she's intuitive eating, you know, focused and everything. But it's like, it's one thing to hear, it's one thing to just do like a 1200 calorie diet on your own. And to hear like, that's not good for you. But when somebody says like, oh, like my doctor prescribed me this 1200 calorie diet, like it just feels okay. And I think that also just gets to like, I mean, we've talked about the issues within healthcare, you know, when it comes like weight bias and sizeism and everything. But I think it also just comes down to like the amount of pressure and the amount of, I can't think of the word, but like, we just put all of our eggs in our healthcare's basket too, like for them to make all of these decisions for us. And we trust them that they're going to be giving us, you know, having us do the best thing, like they're going to make the best decisions for us. But it's just, it's frustrating because also people who are asking for this weight loss related drug are folks who are in larger bodies who already experience weight bias. And it's like, mm-hmm. we know that they may not get the same level of care, right. Especially if they're meeting with a thin provider as somebody else. So maybe that thin provider isn't considering the fact that like to them, the pros of losing this weight outweigh any of the cons that might be associated with them using the medication. Like, yeah. there's just so many different things.
So many
different things. And,
well, and also, I could even see providers just being, like, so bogged down by the requests that they're like, take it, you know?
Right, yeah. I can't
fight this fight anymore, you know?
Right. So, well, and it's also, like what we were talking about, it's safer, quote unquote, to go that route through a provider than a med spa too. And so it's like, if you're faced with a patient who, you know, they're going to get it however they want to get it,
right.
it would be better medically supervised in that sense. So it's, it's frustrating. And one thing too, that I was thinking about is just like the elitism of it, you know, mm-hmm. like the fact that, you know, the people that have access to this, are the people that can afford it. And, and again, I personally don't think that it's beneficial for anyone to utilize it as a weight loss drug just for that reason, but we can't talk about it without talking about like, you know, privilege associated with it too.
Right. Well, you know? And for the people that could really benefit from it with diabetes, they're having trouble getting it because people are using it for weight mm-hmm. loss. And I know we talked about like the compounding stuff, but the FDA has also like seized thousands of units of like counterfeit Ozempic. People are just making totally bogus Ozempic too. And like, I know people that just somehow, I don't know, I don't explore the side of the internet, but just order it on the internet, like without a prescription of any kind. And so, you know, God knows what you're getting.
Right. Well, that's we talked about, I think it was in our last What's Trending Now, this like Nature's Ozempic, you know, like.
Yeah, people are using the name, you know, to associate their products to it when they have literally no similarities. So it's definitely, people are capitalizing on the name to get, you know, to make money and all that stuff. Yeah. But again, like, I feel like we need to reiterate that, like, no shame to anyone who has chosen to use it. I just like hope that you've know or have considered all of these things and are comfortable moving mm-hmm. forward for yourself. I just think there's so many people that don't know about a lot of the things we talked about today. So
And I completely agree. Like, I feel, even though I am considered to be more in like a straight sized body, I know that bodies like mine are still utilizing it for weight loss. And I truly don't blame you, because it is, again, that what was mentioned, and Victoria mentioned it on her, Victoria, we're on a first name basis, on the Real Pod, was like the rise of this, you know, heroin chic and how thin is now in. And like going back to, you know, the 90s of rail thin, incredibly unattainable and unhealthy for many people. And that is really difficult, because for a while, like mid-sized bodies and like larger bodies, like we were making a comeback, you know, like you mentioned, body positivity was trending up, and I think intuitive eating and like size acceptance and everything. And so I would never blame anyone for wanting to utilize this, you know, utilize this product or any product. But again, like you mentioned, just being able to make that informed decision. And also, I think going into it, reminding yourself that like, this isn't like, just knowing what might happen. Like, this isn't a long-term solution. When I stop taking this because I run out of money, I run out of you, whatever, the weight will probably come back. And that does have health implications for us, you know?
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we, always open to having conversations with folks about this. And I even like, I think about anybody who's listening who might like still be on the fence about it. Feel free to reach out. Like, I'm happy to chat with anybody, offer support, or, you know, all the things. Or share with us any of your thoughts or other questions that you have. I think it would be interesting to even like have, I don't know, another professional on to talk about it as well. Even mm-hmm. though Randy, I love what just happened. Like I was getting chills while you were talking, while your pharmacy coat was on. Like it was like, Randy, you still got it.
Still got it. Still got it.
Thanks for tuning in to the Give 'Em the Bird podcast. If you're enjoying the podcast, head on over to Apple iTunes or Spotify and rate, review, and subscribe. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Give 'Em the Bird Podcast to stay up to date with all things GTB. We'll see you back here next week for another episode, but in the meantime, go give 'em the bird.